Hello and welcome to Outspoken. As always, you're joined by journalists Kate, Amy and Sophie Torber.
Coming up on the episode, the Super Bowl performance that everyone's talking about. We dissect Taylor Swift's new documentary, the shock Bachelor decision that's caused a race row, and the revival of YouTuber Shani Grimmon. We're so excited to get into today's episode, and Amy, you have quite an interesting story to tell us about a bit of confusion that happened at the shops today.
Yeah, well, I just went in to quickly pick up some foundation and I felt so awkward because the lady gave me a really strange look and she asked me if I needed a pump and I was like, no, that's all good. And she kept looking at me really odd and I thought, oh God, like, have I walked in my pajamas? Like, what? Why is she looking at me so weirdly?
Are your shorts inside out?
Yeah, did I do a Sophie and wear my shorts inside out? Anyway, and then she asked me, she's like, did you come in yesterday? And I was like, no. And she said, I swear you did. I said, well, I'm a triplet. Maybe it was one of my sister. And it was Kate. And she remembered exactly what color foundation Kate had got.
Yeah, it was. I actually dragged Reese in there with me and I didn't want him to stand near the counter because anyone that shops at MAC knows that the foundations aren't exactly cheap. And he stood there and it was so funny when he heard that they cost $54. He was like, oh my God, I nearly died when they said the price. And he's like, how often do you get a new one? I was like,
Now, moving on to our first topic, Shakira and J-Lo sent the internet into meltdown with their racy Super Bowl halftime performance. While Shakira got tongues wagging literally, it was a massive win for diversity and empowerment and showed a big adjustment to the NFL's PR strategy. Now, Kate, there's a lot more behind this performance that's really interesting. Can you just fill us in?
To understand the importance of this performance, we've really got to go back to last year's Super Bowl. Now, Maroon 5 were picked to headline this Super Bowl, which was played in Atlanta. Now, Atlanta is a city in America that has about 51% Black and African American people, and it was also central to the civil rights movement in the 1960s. So the decision to pick an all-white pop group was very hard for many people to understand. In fact, it actually turned out that there was a petition to get Maroon 5 not to perform at the Super Bowl.
And of course, this is all off the back of reports that superstars like Rihanna, Usher, and Mary J. Blige all passed on the opportunity to actually perform at last year's Super Bowl. And from my understanding, it's due to the fact that there was a lot of thoughts that the NFL are quite racist.
These racist allegations began rearing their head in 2006 when NFL player Colin Kaepernick decided to kneel during the national anthem. His decision to kneel down was based on him wanting to bring attention to the racial inequalities within the US justice system, and he claimed that the issue was bigger than football. Now, this incident sparked a year-long controversy within the NFL, which spilled over into the mainstream, with some people arguing that they were siding with the peaceful protest, while others thought it was like really disrespectful to the military. So one important supporter of Kaepernick was, of course, Jay-Z. Now, it's quite controversial because Jay-Z actually surprised fans when he entered into a partnership with the NFL officials via his Roc Nation firm, and he was actually appointed the organization's live music entertainment strategist. So this is where J-Lo and Shakira come in. So thanks to Jay-Z, he's actually been able to choose the musical acts that are coming through.
So obviously this is a huge PR stunt for the NFL. I actually think it's a great move. It's very clever of them to bring in Jay-Z. And then, of course, get the Latino crowd excited with the likes of J-Lo and Shakira. And to be honest, I think it's an extremely clever move for the NFL. I mean, how much has everybody been talking about it today?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think what is most important is the fact that the NFL has actually looked at the audience that is in the city that they're performing in. So the Super Bowl was held in Miami, and now Miami has a 70% population of Latinos. So I think that is just so incredible that they've actually thought about it. Hey, let's actually provide some performers that mean something to them. And also another big thing is the fact that the Latino audience is actually growing a lot in American football.
Well, race aside, as a woman, I found it amazing to see two women who are actually over the age of 40. I mean, J-Lo is 50. She looked incredible and they shone in that performance. Everyone's been talking about them. And what was so refreshing for me being 30 is to see people like that, one looking so amazing. You can be like, wow, I could look like that when I'm 50. But to see that, you know, the tone that you're not washed up if you're over 40.
I, for one, was in awe of the two of their bodies. How incredible do they look?
There was a lot of skin on show.
I just thought it was so refreshing, though, to see that these women, even though they're in their 40s and 50s, they were being seen as, like, very athletic, amazing dancers. It wasn't like, oh, you guys are past it. Like, you shouldn't be wearing revealing outfits.
They are definitely not past it at all. They would be battling it out with the 20-year-olds on a dance floor, I think.
They looked better than some 20-year-olds.
Oh, I was bloody jealous. Their figures are incredible. I think J-Lo actually caught a lot of attention on Instagram a couple of days before the Super Bowl because she came out in this amazing crop top and high-waisted pants, and all the comments were about how toned her arms were and how her abs were popping. It's pretty incredible. I'm wondering if a lot of that workout has come from the Hustler move.
I feel like J-Lo walked into that stadium with a lot to prove tonight after being snubbed by the Oscars for her work in Hustlers. She had a lot to prove, and she definitely proved all of her critics wrong. Everyone is talking about her.
Well, it was definitely interesting that she decided to come out on a pole, which was how the hell, I mean, obviously her strong arms are holding her up, but that was very impressive. I've got to say, one special moment that really stood out was when J-Lo's 11-year-old daughter came out and did a duet with her mum alongside a choir. What made it particularly special was J-Lo was wearing this big, like, fluffy flag, and one side was the American flag and the other side was the Puerto Rican flag. So just, again, the messaging the NFL were pushing was very strong.
And as I mentioned, Twitter has just gone crazy with memes galore about this topic. The one which has gone absolutely viral is Shakira when she stared at the camera and did what has been described as this kind of licky lick death stare. And this has, have you seen these memes? They're just all over the place.
My favorite one is around Pingu staring at it. There's a snippet from Pingu where he does the same thing and it's bloody hilarious. There's also one with a lamb doing the same thing. It's so bloody funny.
Do you guys think, though, that any women in their 50s were at home watching with their husbands and were just like, oh, fuck off? Like,
well, it's funny you say that because Milwaukee Bucks star Giannis, I'm not even going to pronounce his last name.
That sounds right.
Kumbas, he had a tweet that went viral after suggesting his girlfriend might not have approved to his reaction of the performance. The tweet has already racked up 49,900 retweets and 329,000 likes in 4.5 hours.
Okay, I know off mic you were telling us that this is part of the NFL strategy to get more women to watch, but I think a lot more men would have been tuned into the halftime show.
Well, I think there was something for everyone. I mean, it has come out that the NFL's female audience goes up to about 49% of the total audience during the Super Bowl. So, I mean, from a female perspective, I loved watching it through the dancing, the singing, the costumes, an aspirational perspective. And I'm sure men were loving perving on J-Lo and Shakira.
What I really enjoyed was the fact that we are showcasing women in their 50s and 40s. There is, however, the argument, are we only showcasing them because they look like women in their 20s and 30s?
At the end of the day, I did think that the performance was quite sexual, and I could see that sort of argument that maybe women are only sort of praised when they do behave that sort of way and when they do look younger than their years. But then I couldn't help think, well, fucking go, girls. Like, if I had a banging body like that at 50, I'd be out there too. And I don't know, all I could take was girl power from that performance.
Well, I suppose I kind of took as, oh, if I actually work out every day when I'm that age, I could get like that. And she also said one of her tips is never missing a workout. And I thought, geez, I'm never going to miss out a workout again. The funny part is I'm actually missing a workout to record this podcast. So
now moving on to the peak and the pit of the news cycle. Sophie, what's been your peak this week?
Now, the peak for me has to be that I'm calling it. Shani Grimmon is back, and back in a big way, because she is ready to start sharing about her life again.
About bloody time.
Now, she rose to popularity for sharing everything about her life, from her boyfriend to how she lost her virginity, her embarrassing poo stories. And she has confessed to her fans that she has not been sharing as much, but would like to start getting back into it. Now, I think it came from the fact that she was going through some old videos on her computer that she discovered at her family's house and maybe got a bit nostalgic and realized how much bigger she was back then.
Well, she also mentioned that she'd been listening to some inspirational podcasts and some advice around content creation. So maybe she's actually like, shit, I can't just post any old crap online and get mass views.
Well, it was interesting to hear, though, that one of the reasons she hasn't been sharing is because of the bullying comments she was receiving. So I did feel a bit bad for Shani in that respect, that she felt like she had to sort of step out of the spotlight. So I can't wait. And there was a really funny scene in her latest YouTube.
Yeah, well, she decided to go to one of the prettiest streets in Brisbane. For those who live in Brisbane, it was on James Street. And that's where all of the fancy clothing stores are and beautiful restaurants. And she made her little sister, who's about 10, 11, get out and take photos of her. But what was hilarious is she said she would give her sister $5 for every great shot she got of her.
Well, I don't know. I took it as $5 per photo, and she could probably be taking about $200. No. So it could be quite lucrative.
She did clear that up. She said it's not per photo on the camera roll. Oh. It's per photo that I use on Instagram.
Well, they did go out shopping later, and it did seem like she was buying her lots of stuff. So I don't think she missed out too much.
Now, onto the pit. It has to be the media's treatment of Mitchell Orville and Chloe Zepp. Now, for those who haven't read anything about it, a food critic for the Australian newspaper hit out at the two influencers because basically their PR team put out an email talking about the news that Chloe and Mitch were having a baby and were asking if any brands wanted to reach out and do some sponsored content with them, which from a PR perspective is a very normal email to send out.
Now, this food critic made it sound like the pair were asking for free products when in fact it was a collaboration. Now, I think what a lot of people aren't grasping is the fact that a collaboration is a two-way agreement. So the brands that would be entering this agreement with the two influencers, they would be receiving exposure on their huge platforms. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just a brand agreement.
And to be honest, what I thought was that it's going to be a lot more lucrative for the company than it is for the cost of the product. And it actually really pissed me off because Chloe and Mitch haven't had an easy time falling pregnant. They did have a miscarriage a while back and they brought great awareness for miscarriages. They really weren't shy about talking about it. And then for some dickhead that doesn't even understand social media marketing to come out and say that really annoyed me.
And the other thing as well is Mitchell has been doing some incredible work for the bushfires. He created a t-shirt and some jumpers, which I think raised over $200,000 for different charities involved in the bushfire. So it's sad that his good work isn't being recognized.
And I can't just say these two are not poor. They're not living by free products. If anyone's seen their house tour on YouTube, you will see that they are not struggling to pay their bills.
And this isn't the first time this food critic has actually called out other influencers, I think, for trying to get freebies from his restaurant. And I feel like saying, mate, just get over it. This is how the world works now. And the newspapers that are printing stuff about it, it's like, don't you guys realize this is just how the PR and influencer world works?
Well, as Mitchell said in his rant online, this guy gets paid in free food that he reviews. So what's the difference?
Now, moving on to our next topic, it's the doco that all Taylor Swift fans have been waiting for. The much-hyped Miss Americana Netflix special dropped on Friday night and it's got everyone talking. The documentary profiles everything from Swift's troubled eating to her Grammy snub to dealing with haters and sharing her political views. So, Sophie, what did you think of it?
I absolutely loved the fact that it was about Taylor Swift, but there were a few elements in the documentary and the storytelling that I should have thought could have been better. But my top thing to take out of the documentary was the fact that Taylor Swift hadn't tried a burrito until she was 26 years of age.
I love that there's so many huge themes that are going on in the Taylor Swift documentary, but that's the most fascinating. It is funny because looking at the documentary as sort of a work of art, there were parts that I didn't enjoy. I absolutely I must say I love the documentary and I'd recommend it, but from the perspective, I suppose maybe a journalistic perspective, I feel like it was slow in parts, and especially at the start, and it made me think, if I wasn't a Taylor Swift fan, would I have pushed through it? Because I've watched similar docos. There was the Kevin Hart doco, and I liked that it was put in episodes, a doco series. It would have been interesting to see if Taylor's had been in that format, because I feel like it did start off a little slow.
Yeah, well, journalists have called the documentary The Awakening of Taylor Swift, and it did seem to take a while to get to that awakening during the film. And perhaps that was purposely done because it might have shown her thought process along her journey.
Well, I totally agree with that point. I feel almost bad to critique it because it was so good. But from that critical analysis, it was important for them to build up that narrative about Taylor Swift, because there were so many clips of her shown in her early days. And she did seem very sort of all-American. And there was that theme of always wanting to impress and being the good girl. And that juxtapositioned, especially with scenes of her from her Reputation album, were amazing to see.
Yeah, well, she did talk a lot about her eagerness to please and for the affirmation through applause or fans. And something that touched me was she said, my entire moral code is a need to be thought of as good. It also showed her thought process in the car, and she said, are women taught to seek approval at an early age, and has that held her back in ways that a man would simply brush off? And we do hear her obviously speak about that a lot in her recent song, The Man. And it did make me think, because I feel like at an early age as women, you are told to just be quiet, keep smiling, don't make any waves, and that's the perfect good girl.
I totally agree in that respect. I think it's this ingrained thing. I don't know if it's specifically that someone's like, right, you don't say anything. It's just this kind of understanding as a woman, I suppose, when you're growing up. You know, when they showed those clips of Taylor Swift and she was talking to the American talk show host and she was very proud about the fact, oh no, I shouldn't comment. I've totally seen myself do that in the past, where you don't want to make waves and you feel like people aren't going to take on board your opinion. It's only when you get older you realize how fucked that narrative is.
And going back to her eagerness to please, one pivotal theme in the documentary is, of course, when Kanye West infamously crashed her Video Music Award acceptance speech back in 2009. And at the time, she was just a teenager, and she described this incident as a formative trauma. She said, for someone who based her whole belief system on getting everyone to clap for you, the whole crowd booing is a pretty informative experience.
I was really sad to see at the start of the documentary when Taylor Swift got really upset in her car. It was a scene, she walks out of her house and there's just hundreds of people around screaming. And I love it because she just walked to the car, got in, and she's like, I know, that's not normal. I thought that was hilarious. So once she gets in the car after making this funny remark, she starts talking to the cameras. She's looking through her phone at photos of herself from a recent appearance. And this is where she divulges that she was suffering from an eating disorder a few years earlier. And she starts to talk about her relationship with food and exercise and how it did become really unhealthy. And I do remember photos of her looking very thin. And I remember reading in magazines that she'd just been doing a bit of extra Pilates. And foolishly, I kind of believe that, because to me, Taylor Swift seemed so confident in herself. And she kind of seemed like the last person to, I suppose, have an eating disorder.
I guess you felt like she wouldn't fall into the trap that other women fell into, because she did seem quite confident in her own skin.
But did you see that? Did you feel that, Soph? Were you kind of surprised at how she appeared to loathe her body?
Yeah, I was quite shocked by it. She did admit in the documentary she got down to a size 0 and she's now back up to a size 6. And she said, it's better to think you look fat than to look sick. And what I thought they should have addressed in the documentary was Taylor wanting to put weight back on because she realizes she's a role model. I don't know. I feel like they didn't touch on that topic enough. It kind of seemed like a bit of a, I don't know, they kind of seemed to breeze over a little bit in the documentary.
I mean, but the thing is, she might not have been thinking that way, because I don't know if people were holding Taylor Swift up to this high account because of what she looked like. I don't know if there were young girls just wanting to be thin because they wanted to be like her.
I think she's a huge role model. No,
she's definitely a role model, but I don't know if she's, I feel like a lot of people look up to her because of her music, not just the way that she looks.
I think the two go hand in hand, to be honest.
Yeah, but I don't know whether she got down to such a skeletal weight that people were concerned.
Well, she was a size 0, which is very small.
No, I know, but size 0 in America is different to size, like to what you're thinking. Like a size 0, I think, is about a size 6 or a size 4.
Well, once you look back at the photos with hindsight, she did get ridiculously thin.
No, I agree. She did get ridiculous. She did get very thin, but it's only in hindsight. Like at the time, did you think there was something wrong? I thought
she was naturally thin.
Yeah.
What was also quite alarming was the comment when she was watching back footage of herself from her single, Me, and she said, I have a really slappable face. And I felt like that was such an indication of her listening to troll comments. And that was what really did surprise me, because sometimes you think these celebrities are at such, you know, that they're so big that they wouldn't have time to read the comments, but it just showed such a human side to her that, I don't know, I feel like I've never seen that side of her before.
No, and that's what really surprised me as well when she was talking about her weight. I was so shocked that, I don't know, when I look at someone like Taylor Swift, I suppose because I look up to her and I think she's amazing, I feel like she's got a lot of fans that would be telling her how great she is. But it's always funny that you tend to listen to the negative response and not the positive one.
She did also make an interesting comment that she believes some people get stuck at the age they became famous. And she said it took her a while to catch up to being 29. And I found that really interesting because she's always struck me as someone who is very mature. But at the same time, I suppose if you're having everyone do things for you and, you know, you're not, I mean, it kind of showed in the documentary that a lot of her friends were having kids and married, and maybe she felt a little bit left behind.
It's funny because I took her comments to be totally different, because you know when you hear people talk about Taylor Swift and they're like, oh, I liked her when she was singing Love Story. I almost took it as that was the peak of her fame and that people expect her to be like that. It's funny that you took it. I mean, yeah, I can see how you could have taken it the other way. It was kind of refreshing though to hear that she wasn't ready for kids, because being 30 also, I don't want kids anytime soon. So it was kind of refreshing to hear a career-driven woman that didn't feel ashamed to say that.
She also did speak about how her life's very planned out for her and, you know, a tour will be locked in 2 years in advance, so it is hard for her to make those big life decisions. Something that did strike me in the documentary was that sense of loneliness. I don't know if you felt that. It was following when she won the Grammy, and she was talking about how this was her biggest dream and it was her goal to win a Grammy. And she said, shouldn't I have someone to call right now?
I did get a sense of loneliness in that part of the documentary, but I feel like there was a lot about her life that wasn't shown. It did show her friendship with Abigail, but it didn't really show her friendship with other high-profile people that have been around. And then she has had a lot of relationships, obviously, that weren't shown because she's no longer with them. I did enjoy an insight into her relationship with her current boyfriend, Joe Alwyn. They look like the most perfect couple. And I was kind of pleased to see that he wasn't really featured in it. I think it was done in a clever way.
Yeah, it was clever because obviously she pointed out that something that set their relationship apart was that they wanted it to remain quite private. And the way they kind of weave that into the documentary by showing a clip of her singing a song to Joe and mouthing, I love you, but we still didn't see him. And then we saw her embrace hug him after one of her concerts. It was just kind of those little nice, cute little snippets. It was just what we needed, but didn't reveal too much about their relationship.
Well, I don't know if you've seen this, but people are going nuts online because she was spotted with an alleged engagement ring. And some people think that they're secretly married. And this rumor came about when she dropped her latest album, Lover. And there's a song called Paper Rings, and there's numerous references to marriage and all that kind of thing. Do you think that they could be secretly married?
Well, to be honest, I think it's all a bit of a beat up because she's in the news at the moment and they're trying to grasp at straws to make a story out of nothing.
Well, apart from Joe, another interesting point that the doco touched on was the sexual assault of Taylor Swift, which for me was a real turning point in the documentary.
Yeah, it was at this point that Taylor started to realize that so many of the issues she had been facing alone were actually institutional problems that affected women everywhere. It was quite cleverly put together with the graphics.
Mm.
We see her talking about the fact that the court case was a lot more troubling than the actual incident itself.
So for those who don't know, Taylor was at a meet and greet, and this DJ and his wife came to do a meet and greet with her. And there's a photo which clearly shows this guy groping Taylor's ass. And the most astonishing point of this story is that this guy then got sacked by the radio station he worked for, and he then sued Taylor Swift. I think it was for around $1 million for losing his job. She countersued him for one single dollar. And, you know, Taylor was dragged into this huge case. And as Sophie said, I think the case itself was actually worse and more infuriating than the act itself.
It was touching because they showed a clip of her a year on, and she was talking to her fans at a concert about how she was so lucky that she was believed. And there's so many women who go through court cases or similar situations and their voice isn't heard. So I found that quite an emotional part of the documentary.
Yeah, one point that really stood out to me that Taylor made was about the court case itself, in terms of how the prosecution tried to tear her testimony apart. And I've been involved in a case where it could have gone to court. And I was warned by lawyers about possible things people can bring up about you to try and destroy your character. And this is a really scary situation for women out there, because most of the time, I think it's fair to say that women aren't believed. And there are plenty of cases out there that are sensitive cases, sometimes involving sexual assaults or just other awful incidents that women have to go through. And what's quite frightening with the legal system is that women can go up there and want to tell their story and want to tell the truth. And there's someone who is being paid big dollars to intimidate them, ruin their reputation, and tear them down. And it's crazy because they will throw anything and everything at you to try and get you not to speak out.
So this pivotal moment in the documentary did then lead into the moment where she told her management team that she wanted to begin to wade into politics. One of the most explosive scenes was when Taylor was sitting with her management team. Well, quite symbolic. They were two old white men. And she was sitting with her mother and she was telling them that she passionately wanted to start speaking about politics and what was important to her.
You know, one of them was her dad.
I do know one of them was her dad. And she was furious because Marsha Blackburn, who is a Republican, who she describes as being Trump in a wig, became the favorite for a U.S. Senate seat in her home state of Tennessee. She basically stood for everything that Taylor was against. And in the past, Taylor revealed how she'd been very careful not to voice her political opinions in public. And having come from the country music world, she was constantly reminded by her management of the backlash that the Dixie Chicks faced in 2003 after the lead singer Natalie said she was ashamed of President George W. Bush.
It was such an interesting insight into how the music industry works, because I think sometimes we can often be naive. You know, when you see a tweet go out from Taylor Swift, you kind of just think that she's sent it out. You don't really think of all of the management team that are behind the decision to do so. So I found it crazy as a viewer to see this huge star, Taylor Swift, having to basically have a yelling argument to get her point across that she was willing to make this decision to stand up and hopefully get young voters in Tennessee to actually vote against this woman. On the other hand, I could actually see from a business sense where her father and that other man was coming from. Because they said to her, Taylor, you're going to you could possibly halve your audience if you come out and make these political claims. On the other hand, I was like, fucking go, Taylor. I loved that. That was probably my favorite part when she just stood up. And I love that her mum just sat there and backed her as well.
It was really interesting to see her thought process throughout the documentary as well, because she explained that she was trying to deprogram her own ingrained misogyny as well. And she did make the comment, I want to wear pink and tell you how I feel about politics. And I don't think those things have to cancel each other out. So it did kind of show how she'd evolve, because we did see her in the early stages rocking up in a horse and cart with a sparkly princess dress on. So she's realized she can still be that person, but she can be vocal about her political views and feelings.
Well, near the end, there was this amazing scene where she was talking to the camera and then she apologized after she said she went on a bit of a rant about her own views. She's like, I'm sorry. And she's like, no, I shouldn't have to say sorry. This is my house. Like, I'm giving you my views in my house, which I paid for. I thought that was amazing. I was so glad they left that grab in, because I think as women, we become so apologetic for everything. It's ingrained in us to apologize if we say our point of view, because we've been taught not to ruffle any feathers and not say anything. So I hope there is a generation of young women that watch that and go, no, I'm just going to say what I think and I'm not going to apologize for it.
Moving on, The Bachelorette New Zealand has set tongues wagging after pulling a Batchy World first and appointing two female bachelorettes. However, the bold move has outraged some fans and prompted a race row online. Amy, can you tell us what happened?
Well, it's actually pretty crazy what's happened. There's already been 4 episodes of The Bachelorette New Zealand, and The Bachelorette cast Dr. Lucina as the lead. And The Bachelorette franchise was actually praised for this decision because, as I mentioned, she's a doctor, she's a woman of color, and she's in her 30s. And so she's a very strong lead. And what they've done now is they've brought in a 20-year-old second bachelorette. And I think the guys' eyes almost popped out of their heads, because she's a former contestant on The Bachelorette. She's been in three other reality shows in New Zealand and America, so she's quite well known. And fans are outraged at the fact that this Dr. Lucina can't just be the lead on The Bachelorette. People are saying, well, why is it that a woman of color has to share the lead with another young blonde woman? Why can't she just have her moment?
It seems like it is an afterthought of the producers. I mean, it would be interesting to compare the ratings for the first few episodes. It could have been out of pure desperation to keep the show on track that they add someone in. I don't think it was the right decision to do. I'm sure if they gave Lucina some time for the audience to get to know her and for the story to evolve.
Well, that's the thing. They're claiming that they've had this plan all along. But I find it so odd to introduce it into the fourth episode of the show because you're already invested in the relationships. And it's quite interesting because at first I thought, oh, it must be bullshit. But they've given her a mix of men. So half of the men are sort of in that late 20s to early 30s age group. So the same as hers. And then there's a whole load of men that were put in that are early 20s. And they're all sort of questioning, why are we in here?
So the new blonde girl is going in and she gets to pick from the same batch of men?
Yeah. So basically the way it works is if one of the women has a strong relationship, that guy's kind of off limits to the other one. But you can tell they're trying to pit them against each other. Because if they're both interested in a guy, they can both date him as well. And the reaction from some of the men was appalling. There was one character, which is clearly the douchebag of the New Zealand series. And he was like, ah, so do I get to like have both of them? And he was alluding the whole time that he was going to have a threesome with the women. It was disgusting.
It'd be a good way to weed out all of the dickheads on there. I would be very interested to see if they would pull this sort of shit if it was a male bachelor. I feel like we'd give the male bachelor the chance to be the star of the show.
There was a series in America where they actually had two bachelorettes on the first night of the show, and the men had to pick which bachelorette they wanted to be in the whole series. But we've never actually seen a series with men vying for two different bachelorettes in the same series.
Amy, I understand that the backlash has been pretty big online. Can you talk us through some of the comments that people have been leaving?
Yeah, well, fans aren't happy. One fan tweeted, really? Can brown girls not have anything of our own? Lucina deserves better, and she deserves it all. And then another tweeted, oh, we thought we were going somewhere with a beautiful brown bachelorette taking center stage for the first time. We thought. And another tweeted, I am done with The Bachelorette New Zealand. Women of color are at a significant disadvantage on reality dating shows. There are very few women of color leading ladies on these shows. And it's right. Over the whole series worldwide, there's only ever been one woman of color chosen as The Bachelorette. And that was in the American series. And that was Rachel Lindsay. And her series was amazing. And she was a great bachelorette. She and the guy she picked are still together.
And from what I hear, her series was one of the most popular in America with the highest rating. So it was obviously a winning formula.
It's quite amusing because the Bachelorette New Zealand bosses have hit back at all of this backlash and they put out quite a lengthy statement. It's quite funny because they're trying to make out as if it's a real sort of like girl power move that they've put in these two women, and they've sort of denied any wrongdoing. They've said, rather than pitting the women against each other, this season brings in a real friendship we think viewers will be excited to see. The Bachelorette New Zealand focuses on two strong, successful women. With 3 to 4 episodes a week, the season can explore with Lucina and Lily's stories, and they'll be there to support each other through the trials of modern dating.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's just bullshit. What friendship group do you have that you all date the same guys?
I know.
That's going to cause the biggest bitch fights ever. And that is clearly what they're hoping, because sometimes when I watch The Bachelorette, it gets a bit boring because the guys sometimes don't give much. That's why The Bachelor is so popular, because everyone loves seeing the girls fighting.
Well, the women have actually gone on record and confirmed that they will be there for each other, supporting each other. But we'll just see if some hottie comes in that they're all fighting over. I actually really hope that they do put this on maybe the 10 now or whatever it is, the 10 app that's always like the voices are always out of sync.
I'm sorry though, if this was a move to unite women, they would have done it from the start and they wouldn't have shocked Lucina.
Well, do you know what's funny? Just before we end this show, it's worth mentioning the bachelorette that they've brought in, Lily, she's actually an Australian girl. And as I said, she found fame on Bachelor New Zealand in 2017, where she actually won the show. But she's since been on that Bachelor Winter Games in the US, and that's where she met Courtney Dober, who was on the Australian Bachelorette.
Sounds like she's a bit of an Ali Ogerton. She's had her shot. Maybe she should just go to the pool of people in the real world.
That's right.
As you will have noticed, there was three voices to start with and two to end with. We have had to finish this podcast late into the night to make sure it's out for you on Tuesday morning.
Yes, just as we were filming this, our cousins arrived to go out for dinner with us, so they didn't leave until recently. It's now 11 o'clock at night, and Kate had to race off because she's got an important work breakfast. So we're sorry you couldn't hear Kate's thought on Taylor Swift. I'm sure she's devastated.
And if you did enjoy today's episode, we would absolutely love it if you could share it on your Instagram story and tag us at outspoken_the_podcast.
And if you do listen to this podcast and thoroughly enjoy it, we'd love to hear what parts of the podcast you enjoy. So if you could leave us a review on Apple iTunes, that would be amazing, because we'd love to hear what you guys think.